Welcome to Critical Ditto, the Pokemon role-playing podcast run by us and loved by you. And tonight is a different night. I'm not running a game tonight. No, my name is Stu, but tonight I'm not a games master. I'm a storyteller. Welcome to the library. Didn't see you there. Come on in. Come take a bit. Be quiet. Keep it hush. Shh, of course. Tonight we're going to open some books, read some stories. That might not seem clear right now what that means, but there's a storyteller to my right who's also here. And I don't really know how he's going to introduce himself today, but I'm open to that. I'll keep it down, but are you okay? I don't want to interrupt your reading there, sir, but who are you?
Hi, yes, my name is Ali, and whilst I'm reading a book that says whilst I would normally be playing Kenny Mullet, I'm actually going to be reading a bunch of different stories with my friends tonight. A long title. I feel like the editor really missed the boat on that one. But no, I'm enjoying this library. Bit windy, and bit windy, this library. We're going to build the library as each person introduces it. And just across the other side of the windy library is oh my god, is that my I won't shout, but David, is that you?
Hi, no, it is me. It's a little bit awkward actually, Ali, because normally I'm the very like pro queer voice here, but I heard that a drag queen was doing a reading here. I'm actually protesting it because I'm a bad person. But then I discovered the library. Then I discovered the library wasn't built. And now it's awkward. I'm trying to stage a protest in a library that isn't built for a drag queen who's not here. The drag queen, the non-binary legend.
You can still
Theo,
protest the draft. It's so drafty in here.
Does anybody have a Sharpie-do? Okay, we'll go with it. I'll sort of be slipping into a few different guises, maybe like a drag queen. Oh God, am I actually drag? Is everything just drag? Am I protesting myself? Am I the draft? Oh, Tom, I'm having an existential crisis. Could you step in for a second?
Hello! I've just come from the monster truck rally, I've just experienced a lot of loud noises. Oh. How's the library?
Oh, worse with your presence.
Oh, okay. I'll go. Have a good time. Brandy's not in this one.
Who? Bye. Oh, he's gone.
Who even was that?
That was the greatest storyteller of all.
Jesus.
That was Bruce.
That was Bruce.
As if Proust is the greatest storyteller of all time. That was Jesus.
I write all my best stuff after the monster truck rallies.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special edition of Critical Ditto. We say special. You may think less good. You may think not what we signed up
for.
Wow.
Signed up for?
I mean, once you get past episode 54, you sign the written contract that says I will, continue until the end.
There are terms.
There's this terms, yes.
Which is, it's hilarious that you said that, Stu, when this is the most prepared Critical Ditto episode of all time, and you're starting it by saying you might not like it very much.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, exactly. No, we're doing something a bit different today. I'll set the scene. We ended the last episode on an exciting cliffhanger where we were basically staring down war in Formia.
Warmia, some might say.
Warmia, indeed. Not Coldia. where Pokemon League and Team Mystic were facing off against each other, and it was going to be a big climactic, bombastic clash. And I went back and forth about how to do this in the podcast. Do we buy some Warhammer figurines and live stream us playing it? Probably very cool, but also a very different media than what we normally do. Do we have first-person shooter and focus on one soldier as they map their way, all quiet on the Western Front style, through the battle itself? Also very cool. Spoiler alert, we're doing something different. Until I landed on the fact that we've done a war before. A smaller scale war, sure, but we have done a big scale battle in Critical Ditto before. We did it in the core, and we used a device known colloquially as war stories. And it was a small section then, interspersed into a regular episode. But no, tonight, you lucky listener, we invite you to sit down, pull up a chair, as the dining room proudly presents some more war stories. It's as if you've opened an Anthony Beaver historical account of a battle in Formia, and we're going to take some extracts. We're going to take some stories from this period. The start of this climactic conflict to a specified endpoint that I have designated. We don't know what the other people have written. There could be overlap. There could be no overlap. A character may die in one story and then come back in a later story. Just go with it. Just go with it. But that's our pitch. Do you like it?
I love it.
That makes no difference. It's going to happen anyway. Okay, cool. Let's plow on and welcome you to War Stories. I defer to you, David, to just kick us off in this Twilight Zone anthology series of Critical Ditto. Take us on our first journey.
I would love to. At so many other points in their life, Theo would have described the church as a perfect democracy. A fully functioning ecosystem of curious, engaged people who asked questions and sought the best possible answer for their problem. A place where voter turnout was impossibly high and the results truly reflective. That was always the sell, at least. But, Theo thought as they now stood in the church's quorum chamber, how could you have a functioning democracy and a functioning choice when information was hidden or manipulated or given to you in such a way that it would always suggest the maintenance of order was the right thing? Had any vote Theo ever made in the church as it once was ever been a meaningful shift in how it was run? Had it all been about as real as their memories of their King's Mock ceremonies? This tension with the ideal of personal autonomy was central to Theo's final conversation within the Conclave before they mobilised for battle at the Sephiroth Tree. Theo had composed a Privy Council moments after Honey's call, composed of church stalwarts, allies, and those the church now offered sanctuary. The 13, for there had to be a casting vote, was to be presided over by Adri Fomonsk in Theo's absence, a decision that many smirked at, but also made, in Theo's mind, absolute sense. Who else could know the weight of a bad decision, like they did? In this council, Adri started things off by explaining to those gathered what they had witnessed in the unknowns, the schisming primarily, but also how the church was born. This was backed up by the returning compass points Mrs. W and Mr. E, at which point Juliet fed this into her knowledge of the Blood Library, and how this suggested that those church members she had sensed traced poker powers in must be the very ones who had been schismed. It was then Ainsley and Ableforth rewarded Theo felt at last for parachuting their slowpoke into the midst of a colossal stampede, who flagged
I'm
the
sorry,
Juliet
what
described.
A call out for Ainsley and Ableforth.
Ainsley and Ableforth back, I'm so happy.
Big glow up. No plotline not wrapped.
Can we appreciate David's mid-reading edit? spelling correcting himself whilst reading the word. I am agog, I am aghast.
It was very impressive.
I'm honoured. Agog and aghast didn't make the church council, actually. Ainsley and Ableforth took the place. But they
were furious.
It was then Ainsley and Ableforth rewarded Theo felt at last for parachuting their slowpoke into the midst of a colossal stampede, who flagged that what Juliet described of awakening people's powers was as wild and unpredictable as what Frey does. But the difference, Theo pointed out to an uncomfortable silence, is that Frey doesn't offer a choice. She only offers the illusion of one. Adri shifted in their seat. Just like the church had done for centuries, added a newly reawakened and newly angry Le Bon. With this, the refugees and allies then spoke their piece. Aster to the lack of data, but the fascinating hypothesis. Heron to the potency of poker powers in a war that required fire with fire and against a league he knew all too well.
I know the Hannah... league and I'll kill them.
Perfectly done. Hannah to what she had experienced under Seto Kappa and Tapu Dhabi before Candy had helped her escape capture. General Phillips as to what their experience as a military strategist for the league and former antagonist of Frey and the other evil teams taught him. Squash Mallet then spoke of the artistic capacity she believed poker powers might offer those less willing to fight.
Why did I know that Squash Mallet was going to be in this? Why did it, even at the beginning, I was like, Squash Mallet will be here.
And briefly, everyone debated asking Theo why they had brought a radical landscaper into this inner sanctum.
There we go. David, self-aware. David's self-aware. It's okay. It's okay.
Thank you, Tom, for actually setting up that goal really perfectly.
David's read me again. Yet again, he is five steps ahead.
I'm not only reading you, I'm already correcting the typos in what you've written. And briefly, everyone debated asking Theo why they had brought a radical landscaper into this inner sanctum, only to remember they had also invited a 10-year-old urchin.
That's me!
Audrey heard it all and then looked to Theo.
I realise you wanted to vote, but do you wish to offer us anything?
Theo shook their head.
I've offered you everything I know, because everything I know comes from all of you. Some of you may be coming with me to the front lines, some of you might not be. But in my absence, it is for the 13 of you to decide what votes are put to the church and how best to proceed. No more shadowy leaders. Now it's our enlightenment.
Audrey winced. Theo smiled and placed a hand on Audrey's shoulder. They felt the electricity of excited skin beneath their touch.
I trust all of you because at one point, I didn't trust a single one of you. Ask those whose blood you sense the schism in, Juliet, if they wish to be awakened. Ask everyone, including them, does the church go to war? Every vote counts, whether this is their first day in the church or the 100th year. I expect nothing from any of you, bar respect for people's choice. That's the only thing that will separate us from our enemies. Correct?
As Theo left them to their votes, they heard, or rather didn't hear, that the door didn't slam in their wake. Turning, they saw Audrey, solemn in the doorway.
Frey gives everyone a choice.
They panted.
Don't let yourself believe.
Did you have a choice?
Theo said, tears in their eyes.
Was there a choice? If you didn't kill Dramoxis?
I could have died instead.
That's not a choice.
It is. You just don't like the choice I was given.
If a choice can only ruin the world in different ways, then it's not a good enough set of options,
said Theo.
I want to live in a world where nothing we do can hold any meaning without others to back it.
Audrey sighed.
Those other two have made you weak.
They have, haven't they?
Laughed Theo.
Isn't it wonderful to not have to be smart and strong anymore?
And with one final kiss, Theo went to save the world.
Bravo. Oh, I love that.
That's beautiful, David. That's beautiful. The power of these vignettes to write people out of a story, it's just be like, and this character did not come, and they did not come on the journey, and that was the end of their story.
David, knock, knock, knock.
Oh, oh, who's there?
Hi there, David, it's me, Barnaby Timms. I've just read the script. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Oh. The sound of a door slamming, slamming in the face.
I don't seem to feature.
I'd rather cast Hedron, and that's low. That's low for me.
It's both or neither, unfortunately.
David? He's gone. Hedron, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just reading my script. I got lines. I gotta learn my lines. Yeah.
What lines?
News just
oh,
in.
Oh, Hedron, you're here. Oh, thank God. Have you learned the monologue on page 5?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, deep emotions. It's going to really stretch me. Really stretch me.
Oof. I think that Tony's yours this year, Hedron.
No.
I'm that bug catcher that you met in that one episode. I've got lines.
Wait, your voice has changed from that episode.
Are you sure you're not Blob?
No, the bug catcher's playing Blob and Farb.
Well, you shall be hearing from my lawyers. Good day to
Hello,
you.
Hello, I'm the lawyer. I've got lines. This is
what?
Fantastic. Thanks,
no,
Theo.
No, that's not fair. You've given all the lawyers in all of Formia lines, so none of them will litigate against
Conflict
you.
Conflict of interest. I'm so sorry, Barnaby.
You are a smart cookie, Mr. Leavesley. I will eviscerate you in fiction, sir. You just wait for my own vignette.
Maybe we should move to Tom's vignette next. Do you want to take us into war, Tom? Are you cool with that?
Let's go to war.
With the title of this vignette, Tom, take it away.
The Forgotten Champion.
before we go, do you have any roles?
Notes already. The title, we've got three words in. Stu, I can't stress to you enough, this vignette is 5 pages, okay? We are going to need to whip through some of the notes. Okay?
Ironically, I will have forgotten the title by the time we get to the end of the vignette.
Yes, there are characters. I'll give you your characters now.
Boromir Draw is going to be played by... Oh, this feels... It feels like a cast is going up at uni. Boromir Draw...
It's me.
Okay, it's Tom. It's Tom. All right, he's taken two roles. Oh,
I've
interesting.
Taken two roles.
All right, he backs himself. And the narrator. Oh, my gosh.
Hey, this is Tom's revenge for not being given anything to say.
Guys,
David's
the next role... The next role is huge. I'm writing for the listener, Gary Smoke.
Oh, this
now,
is big.
This is tough. This is tough.
No influence here.
Oh, this is... This
what letters
is real...
are going to come out of that keyboard?
I'd like to see David do it personally, that's me.
But unfortunately, David didn't put Barnaby Timms on the council, so...
And I do it again!
It's Stuart Clark. It's Stuart Clark.
It's Stuart Clark, okay.
Oh, of course Stu's got the lead.
Hammer Splat, Ali, is up for grabs.
Hammer Splat, who's never been had a voice before, has she?
Never had a voice.
Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, there's fertile ground, Ali, for a creative actor.
I will happily take that.
I think Soldier, therefore, will probably be played... by Stu. No, David, you can take Soldier.
It'll be Soldier. The best Soldier you've ever heard.
Soldier.
Oh, there's another character. You're going to be Soldier / Caribbean Blue. Okay, this war story is called The Forgotten Champion. Here we go. What do we think Boromir... it's not started. What do we think Boromir Draw's voice is? Because I've...
It's just a boring drone. It's a boring drone.
A boring drone.
Oh, no. If he's narrating it, it's peppy and full of energy and keeping the listener engaged. That's what he sounds like.
Okay, let me just do stuff with my face. I'm just going to start doing stuff with my face.
How long is this going to take, Tom? Because I do need a wee.
Okay.
How long do you need to get into character?
Okay, it's like I'm eating a bit of a... Am I here? Am I out here? Am I front in the teeth? Am I quite horsey? Is this something?
Horsey.
Is this something? I'm going to go with this. Here we go. If you go to the Pokemon League Museum... You'd see a lot of self-aggrandizement. You'd see the entire fabled saga of the First Four stopping the great meteor from destroying Formia. You'd see endless testimonials and maps illustrating how many missions League trainers had completed. You'd see giant screens depicting the famous battles of former Formian champions. A large bust of Aloysius Snooze and his pristine diaries to peruse. Then, next, the extensive wardrobe and music designed by the mighty Daisy Crope. Yes, you can design music. Followed by a sea of endorsements and fan letters to the current champion, Gary Smoke. But if you look hard enough, you see a small plaque. Right there between Daisy Crope's fashion parade and Gary Smoke's wall of adoration. A simple brass plaque that most would think might be telling people not to touch the exhibits. But actually, it is the only reference to Formia's other Pokemon champion. It reads... The title of Pokemon Champion was passed to Boromir Draw, who held the title for 14 years before he was defeated by Gary Smoke. That's it. That's me. It's sad to say, but I visit that plaque a lot. That's me, the longest reigning Pokemon Champion. That plaque hanging on a neglected wall, languishing in the shadows of one of Daisy Crope's more adventurous wardrobe designs. David... What is Daisy Crope's most adventurous hat?
It's a full Sephiroth tree, but the roots then sort of cascade down and turn into a wrap dress as well. And the last time somebody got into it, they had to get a chiropractor to help them out of it. Very difficult to put on, very difficult to take off.
It sounds awful, and that is drawing the attention away from the plaque. But why was I thinking about this now? Cut to the sounds of war. Guys, sounds of war? Ow!
My dog.
Sorry. Yeah, Pokemon War, Ali, not just the, like, general war.
Ow!
Oh!
Oh, my boo-boos!
We shall fight upon the beaches.
Germany has declared war.
Seeking. Ow.
They're too strong. The attacks, we can't stop them. I've never known poker powers like this.
I needed to focus on where I was, on the giant steps of the League Concourse in the middle of another war.
Don't you guys hold me back, said Gary.
The extreme ball Pokemon aren't following orders, Gary. Ooh. It's me, Hammer Splat. Gary, some of them are glitching. They're attacking our side.
Hammer, Salad, out of my way. Tyrantrum, Earthquake.
The ground split around us, and the air filled with the deafening roars and cries of people and Pokemon. The smoke cleared and I saw him. League champion Gary Smoke was leading his half of the S-Class Trainer Battalion. I use the word leading loosely. The reckless primate had charged headfirst into a pack of ravenous mighty Enna poker powers. The mission was to hold our ground, not advance. But trying to tell Smoke anything like that was like trying to teach a victory bell to whistle.
Oh, you think little doggies can take on the champ? You think a cacnea without spines is better than a bowling ball? You think that a chimp is a real Pokemon? It's not. That's an animal.
I think there's one more.
Oh, you think your pectorals are bigger than a Persian's? I don't think, I've seen big Persians, man, and they're not at all that.
I heard the crack in his voice, and the insults were really lacking in quality.
Hey now.
His facade was faltering, probably because he could see the situation.
Caribbean's down, Gary. Rogue ride on your sick.
Gary dived to Gary dived to his left.
This was a good shot, Ali.
Those are ours.
Gary dived to his left as a rampaging Rhydon with glowing blue eyes lunged at him with a horn drill. Things were going from bad to worse. If Smoke's side collapsed, our flank would be exposed. My unit was holding position, fending off wave after wave of every type of beam under the Pokemon sun. Electricity wrapped in flame, ice punctuated with psychic energy, whips of grass and steel. But we were holding. Our barriers were solid. My partner Toxapex, safe within their spiked shell, launched volleys of spikes and stealth rocks, effectively stopping the poker-powered in their tracks and allowing our blue-eyed rentals that weren't breaking ranks to grapple with them. At alarming regularity, however, more and more of the blue eyes were breaking ranks and charging madly to attack whoever or whatever.
Boromir! Boromir! We need you!
I held firm. If I moved, we'd lose ground.
Captain Draw, sir, we need cover. Don't you remember me? I'm Janet. We fought in the war in...
Have you got a stutter there, soldier?
Satellitesville.
Satellitesville? Yes.
Satellitesville.
I remember Satellitesville. But I held firm over the sound of another almighty magnet bomb. I made out Gary's words to his troops.
You'll be waiting hours for Draw to move an inch. He ain't coming because he'll lose.
I twitched. First, my name is Boromir Drawnevsky, not Boromir Draw. Draw is a nickname, an unwanted pseudonym assigned to me by those who dislike how I do things. Second, I don't lose. My parents were the losers. They lost at everything they tried. Business, friendship, and ultimately, their marriage. They lost it all, even me. I couldn't continue watching them lose, so at 14, I left to join the League, a League that I've dedicated my life to. Third, people think that when I battle, I don't battle to win, which I'll admit is true, but it's only half true. I don't battle to win, I battle not to lose. And I've never lost.
Please, Boromir, I have a family, I have kids, little Agneta, Anifrid, Benny and Bjorn.
Memories of the last war in Satelliteville were flooding back. I remember vowing to succeed, to make sure I was not going to be consigned to the annals of history as another Drawnevsky loser. I was solid. I always gave our side a foothold, consolidated our positions, and systematically advanced on the enemy. But even with my flawless record, I was never seen as a hero, as a champion. I wasn't flash enough like others. I remember Phillips and his Ursaring sidekick bouncing from incredible victory to unbelievable loss, and yet they were celebrated as heroes. But they weren't consistent. They were reckless,
Phillips could win battles, but Boromir would win wars. Apparently, winning the way I do might be fine for a war, but not for a champion. My average battle time was 7 hours and 58 minutes, which was apparently not good for ratings. But I continued on, as I always had done, and I didn't lose for 14 years. People attempted to bribe me, sabotage me, even poison me to try and bring my reign as champion to an end and install someone more palatable, more popular. But nothing could make me lose. I had the title of champion, a title implying that I was Formia's greatest battler, a hero, but no one believed that. They saw me as a bore. When Gary Smoke was crowned champion last year, it was accepted wisdom that he had won and I had lost. No such situation had occurred. The match was interrupted by an explosion from the stands and was never actually finished. It was deemed that Gary was in the winning position and acted like a champion by neutralizing the explosion. So he was crowned the winner, and the league rejoiced. That's the guy they want as their champion. Flash and brash. A hero.
Tiny growth.
Boromir, help me. I'm Scouse and losing my accent.
That does sound bad, Hammer. That sounds like two bad things happening to you right now. Gary's battalion were on the brink of wipeout, while my team had a solid position thanks to Toxapex's baneful bunker. Leaving our position would leave our unit vulnerable, but doing nothing would spell the end for Smoke. I thought about that plaque in the League Museum. Was that really all I ever wanted it to say?
Is that?
No way.
Toxapex! Liquidation! It was the only time I saw Toxapex hesitate. Just for a moment, a realization that they would have to show themselves. Their spiked outer dome was going to need to rise up to use a move they were not even sure they could use. But they could sense the danger around. The poker-powered giants sweeping our forces aside whilst extreme ball Pokemon, supposedly on our side, were losing control, convulsing with overloaded energy, or paralyzed by synaptic explosions within, or wildly lashing out at anyone, friend or foe, that got too close. Toxapex, still in my original Pokeball, knew the situation. They knew we were going to lose, but this time, we knew we couldn't just give up. A torrent of water burst from their spikes, creating shimmering spears that pierced the onrushing horde. Retreat! S-class battalion, retreat! I screamed the words I had never screamed before in my life.
No way, draw! We drop back now! They surround us!
You don't leave now, Gary. They kill us. I can give you the time you need. Let me stall them.
You know, draw, you're a dad cool son of a gun.
That was the coolest thing I'd ever heard, and I could see it in Gary's eyes. He knew the score. He knew I had made my decision. He nodded. His Tyrantrum grabbed Caribbean with its jaws, and Gary jumped up onto its back.
Fall back! Back to the center! Fall back!
I could see it hurt him, and that felt good. As Toxapex spun their dome, throwing water javelins relentlessly at the monstrous half-human, half-Pokemon beings racing towards us, we were holding them back. It seemed like the years of only utilizing defensive strategies had given Toxapex an endless store of attacking power that they were now able to unleash. But there were too many. I saw an entire group of human-dragon hybrids pacing around our watery barrier. Humans with wings and tails breathing flamethrowers and hyperbeams to try and break Toxapex's defense. Behind them, the largest Garchomp I had ever seen lurking, waiting for an opening as yet more abomination crowded towards us. I was going to lose, and really lose this time. But I didn't feel bad. Having only ever seen Toxapex's outer shell, it was nice to look into their eyes for the first time. Only now did it feel like I was really seeing them. Maybe this was the Pokemon champion people yearned for me to be, or the one I wanted to be. It happened suddenly. I could have sworn I saw Toxapex smile as the speed of their spinning spiked dome slowed. And in that instance, that moment of connection, a blue dragon fin sliced through them. The water fell to the ground, and maybe the rain had started. I took them in my arms, letting the toxic spikes of their dome dig into my body, and the poison didn't hurt like I thought it might. I looked to see Gary closing the large steel door at the top of the steps as the final members of our battalions dove back to the center of the league. Losing like this didn't feel so bad. Maybe this was what it feels like to be a hero. Sadly, I couldn't envision them updating my plaque. But maybe, at least to myself, I could feel like... But before I could finish that thought, either the poison took hold of me, or the Garchomp's sharp fangs ripped through my throat. Maybe the plaque should instead read, "Just another Dronevsky. Just another loser." There it is.
Oof, that got me at the end. Didn't realise it was going there.
Thanks very much. Now, for listeners, the little Easter egg there was that I didn't actually write some of the bits that the others had to say. I just asked them to improvise various bits. So that's maybe why they sounded slightly panicked and on the spot.
We were in battle. It works. It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
It was a really good idea.
Yeah. I've kind of done the same. I basically just said, "Tom, can you write my vignette for me on the spot right now?" And I think that's going to work really well, isn't it, Tom? We'll get to that later. Now, Ali, I think it makes sense to maybe move from the forgotten hero to the stinky hero. So, Ali, take us into the world of the stinky hero. Oh, it's already precast.
Yep, precast. And boy, have I got a big role.
Oh, Tommy Dale as Frey. Yes.
Yes, listeners, I will read out the cast list because, unlike Tom, I think things through. Tom, middle name Dale, is playing Frey.
Wow.
This focuses mainly on Taronius Chunda. This is the stinky hero, is the T-Chun himself. And David, having voiced that role so effortlessly in the past, you've been recast.
Titular role, baby. Yes,
titular role. You also multi-role in a surprise twist as groundskeeper Billy.
Say what?
The shirt's going to fold in.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I know. Ooh. And speaking of things folding in, Stu, you've got the two roles of Calico and Salad Fingers.
Oh, S-class trainer Salad Fingers.
Oh, I love that.
Whoa. Okay.
Who's that Pokemon?
Horsey.
We were just about to record a midsection, actually, Ali, so you've...
Ha-ha! You tried to do it without me, and I foiled your plan.
Yeah, yes, tell us, how did you crack our dastardly undercover plan here?
Well, I followed my...
Wait, colleague, your mic has switched
back to connected.
Internal.
I thought it was like an attempt at a booming superhero voice.
Yeah, so did I.
There we go. I've been foiled by my arch nemesis, audio problems.
Whismar.
I'm back.
Finally, for the fight finale. You'd forgotten about old Wizzy, didn't you? But here I am.
Old Wizzy.
Welcome to the midsection. We are going to read this midsection from Macarius Culk. My dad and I have started listening to your podcast, and we have had an idea for an NPC named Handy Andy McCandy. He started following Gary Smoke shortly after he left on his first Pokemon journey. Trying to be helpful, Andy gathered up the shattered remains of all of Gary's broken Pokeballs whenever a Pokemon would burst out instead of being caught. He promised Gary that he could fix them, to which Gary said, "That certainly would be handy, Andy." Everyone in the entourage began calling him Handy Andy after that. Unfortunately, despite tinkering with the scraps every night, often until well after midnight, he never managed to repair any of the broken Pokeballs. Oh. Eventually, he gave up on fixing them, but he never stopped collecting them. Since Gary's rise to the rank of Pokemon champion, Andy has opened a museum to display his unprecedented collection. The museum features especially such balls. Features what? But what Macarius means is the museum features only the balls that burst before the balls that burst before he caught his most famous Pokemon. Like the famed Tyrantrum.
I can't do this.
The Eevee that would evolve into Espeon, and even the broken remains of a snag ball that a no-good thieving trainer once tried to use to steal Luke, the Lucario. Sincerely, Mackie, that's me, and Jackford, that's my dad, Colk. Well,
it's a father and son
doing a thing about museums and balls.
It's so good. It's so good.
Just some unfortunate typos. But yes, that is Handy Andy McCandy. So I would assume then that Brandy would know
Handy Andy McCandy.
Ooh, maybe that was it. Maybe there was a sort of...
Yeah, what was the relationship? Well, Brandy, you tell us, what was your relationship with Handy Andy?
I think Brandy was kind of frustrated with Handy McCandy because he was sort of a clinger on, a kind of hanger on to the whole entourage. And Brandy slowly realised that was probably her as well. Like, she was like, ugh, what a gross hanger on. Ugh, this is really annoying, like, to have him hanging around. And then slowly as time wore on, she was like, oh, wait, I think that's also me. I'm a hanger-on. I don't add anything to this. But I think in the beginning, she was probably quite a bully to Handy McCandy. I think she knew that Andy couldn't fix the broken Pokeballs, so would really pile on the pressure to Handy McCandy.
And more Andy self-actualized.
Yeah. More of the... kept the balls from sort of the beginning of Gary's adventure and then placed a bet on it and actually ended up going really well because Gary became a Pokemon champion.
Like, I think he's going to become champion. I'm going to keep these balls and make a museum. And then when he did, he made bank when everyone was like, oh, cool. Gary's
He also kept the broken balls of, you know, people who didn't succeed. Jensen, the accountant. But that never went anywhere.
So he collected a lot of people's balls.
Do not retcon Jansen.
Sorry.
So he's just collecting balls left, right and centre just in case anyone is successful at any point.
Is that not the art market, Ali? With the snag ball, as soon as they said snag ball, my assumption was that if a snag ball had arrived in Formia, that must have been a very early inspo for the extreme ball, because we know that that is a ball that could capture anything.
Oh yeah. Do you think Handy Andy took Seto Kappa around their museum and showed them the snag ball?
Was Handy Andy involved in the development?
I was going to say, did Handy Andy sell the snag ball design?
Handy Andy would have been a connoisseur of rare Pokeball types. And maybe this ore snag ball ended up in Formia somehow. We don't know how. It was imported, black market, dark web, who knows? It ended up in Formia. And Handy Andy sees it on the floor and is like... oh, I'm just gonna fix up this ball without, but realizing he's like, oh my, I have found the pearl within the Gorbis here. I have found this incredibly rare specimen. I'm gonna keep this for myself, blah, blah, blah. This is my special collector's item. Cut down the line. Seto Kappa catches wind and goes to the back of the museum to see the hidden, the restricted section of the museum. Dark deals, handshakes, Handy Andy gets the handshake he's deserved. Does Handy Andy want revenge?
I think Handy Andy wants revenge.
I think so. And he's like, listen, Seto's pitch is if everyone can catch extreme Pokemon, then Gary will be nothing.
And then Handy went, it's all gone according to Plan D. And then Seto Kappa went, what happened to Plan A through C? And then Andy went, it's kind of my thing. I just go with it, Seto, that's mine.
Oh, Plan D. I see.
Oh, he got there. There it was. So Handy McCandy... is actually...
created essentially the prototype extreme ball, essentially. Oh. So is that that prototype... because Gary was given a prototype... oh, my God, Gary was given a prototype extreme ball. Handy Andy, you evil, evil...
He was there. He was on the beach somewhere, just like cackling.
On that beach.
Use it, Gary. Use the extreme ball.
He went back to Gary's party to try out this extreme ball. He went there with Seto Kappa. Wow. Oh, my God. How Machiavellian.
There we go. I will say... poor Mackie and Jackford, the father-son duo, just wanted to give a wholesome character who collected balls, and now we've made them an arch-villain.
They've listened to this podcast, they know the rules. They turn into a band, a dark gym leader, or a villain. It's one of the three.
You okay there, Stu?
I'm just coughing.
It's going to be sweet audio, that.
Stick Wisma,
Wisma, I have created more audio problems by entering your throats and forcing you to cough. Oh, that sounded weird. Oh! If you want to submit a character, you should just do what you always do, because I feel uncomfortable and wish to end the section. Goodbye!
Who's that Pokemon?
Horsey!
It's Horsey!
Taronius Chunder was in a dark place. Quite literally. He had been given a mission by his captain, Frey, to scout the sewers underneath the Pokemon League, where the entrance to the Sephiroth tree lay. The idea came, of all places, from her Zoroark.
There is a tunnel inside the core of the tree, from the very bottom to the very top.
It drawled in full groundskeeper Billy mode.
I remember finding it in my reconnaissance all those months ago. It buries itself into the ground wherever the tree settles.
Okay,
replied Frey.
But how will we find this tunnel underground?
This is Salad Fingers, Stu.
Oh!
the roots!
Came an unnerving voice from the corner. Bet you can't guess who it is. Taronius felt a chill run down his spine. Salad. The S-class trainer previously loyal to the Pokemon League, who had deferred to Frey after revealing their poker powers they had kept hidden from the public for decades.
No. Gag.
Always lurking in the shadows. After all, who understood trees better than an individual with the poker powers of a Trevenant?
Ooh. The roots of the Sephiroth tree dig deep.
I hate this character so much.
Continued Salad, rusty spoon between his fingers. He stepped into the light. Frey had unlocked more of his poker power in the last week, the side effect being that his skin had become a grotesque combination of human flesh and tree bark.
Vom.
In the forest, on the soil, this is not a problem. But inside the Pokemon League, it will be. The very foundation the tree sits upon will be broken, splintered. We find those roots. We follow them to the tree. All we need is a way underground.
Zoroark stood up.
I am still considered the groundskeeper of the tree. It would be easy for me to...
No,
interrupted Frey.
That is compromised. You were filmed inside the core fighting with Theo. You can only use that illusion on this ship. With the League patrolling the city, your shapeshifting is the only way we can walk the streets freely.
Then she looked at Taronius.
But it is not above ground we need to walk. There are sewers running under the League. Taronius, you will go. Navigate your way from the sewer's entrance at Lake Serperior to the tree.
She paused. Her eyes lingered on his crawdaunt claw.
Do you think you are capable of that? Or would you like some more control?
Her hand began to blacken. Taronius gulped. Frey had offered to unlock more of his poker powers several times, and each time he had refused, the image of Octi transforming from human to octillery still burnt into his brain. He wondered how many more times she would respect his refusal. But he could not lose his humanity.
No, I don't need any more control.
He stammered.
I can do it.
Frey's eyes lingered on him. For just a second longer than he was comfortable with. Did she know? Could she tell how conflicted he was? How unsure he was of where his loyalties lay?
Salad, you will go too.
She declared, still looking calmly at Taronius. Yeah, he thought. She knew. This is how Taronius Chunder, first mate of the Rough Day, formerly the Flash Mullet, formerly Team Nautilus, had ended up wading through the filth and sewage of the Pokemon League in near total darkness, flanked by a grotesque combination of human and tree. How had it come to this? It seems only yesterday that he and his beloved Octavia were on that beach. The day still haunts him. Her swept out to sea. Him swimming out to save her. The whirlwind of light, noise, wanes and screams as Octi somehow transformed from human to Pokemon. Him reaching out a hand to help her, coming to and discovering that hand was human no more. He had failed his Octi. It was all his fault. Or so he had thought. Taronius's mind wandered back to last night. Couldn't sleep. He needed some air and to see Octi. Despite the years that had passed since she had transformed, he still loved her, still felt calmed by her presence. He limped through the bowels of the Rough Day, ascended to the open air, and there she was, majestically keeping that ship aloft. His Octi.
Oh, Octillery.
Not, however, on her own. Perched on her shoulder was a crobat, and riding that crobat, Frey. Sweat formed on the back of Tyronius' neck. As silently as he could with his wooden leg, he crept up almost directly underneath them.
I do love it up here, Octavia. I look up and I see nothing but stars. I look down and I see Formia. All of it. All the land, all the buildings, all the people. I am just one tiny little thing in this world. Yet I know as soon as my feet touch the ground, that insignificance melts away. Because I am needed. I am so necessary. And so alone. Did you ever feel that, Octavia, before I unlocked you? Did you ever feel lonely in a room full of people? That's me. Every day. What was Tyronius like when Kenny Mullet was captain of this ship? When I took ownership of this vessel, he seemed sad. Swore his loyalty to me, of course, but I've always known that his loyalty lies elsewhere. Not to me, not even necessarily to Kenny Mullet. No, his loyalty lies to this ship. And to you, Octavia. I do not forgive those who refuse me. If they are unwilling to liberate poker-powered people, then they do not deserve their gifts. We could have it all, Octavia. You, Tyronius, if you had simply agreed to follow me that day at the beach, you could have been a part of the greatest revolution of our age. Instead, you're here, tethered to this flying hunk of wood. I hope you regret your choice.
Tyronius could hear no more. Tears in his eyes, teeth clenched, arms shaking with rage, he aimed his crawdaunt claw at Frey, ready to unleash whatever combination of furious energy came out of it. Then, a hand on his arm. Calico.
Think,
he whispered slowly.
This will only end badly for you.
But Calico, she did that to my Octi.
I heard, but you cannot beat her, not on your own. Go back to your room, Tyronius.
Tyronius lowered his arm, beaten and sobbing.
What do I do, Calico? Brandy, Theo, and Kenny lost, so it's her or the League. The League win and I live in hiding for the rest of my life. She wins and I live in fear for the rest of my life.
Calico grabbed Tyronius' remaining human hand.
You do your mission tomorrow. Scout out the entrance to the Sephiroth tree. And like me, you survive. Now back to your room. Stop.
Oh, God.
Said Salad.
Oh, Salad.
Breaking Tyronius out of his reverie.
I think we've done it. I think we're here.
Tyronius looked up. In the dim light, he could see great gnarled roots breaking into the rock above him, curving their reach around the ceiling of the sewers like an Ariados's web. This must be where the tree sat. Salad skulked further down the tunnel of the sewer.
There are more roots down here. I guess they spread out like a great circle under the tree.
Tyronius sighed. Deep down, he hoped he'd fail.
So what now, Salad? We blast our way through?
Blast our way through?
Tyronius could feel the sneer in Salad's face, even in the darkness.
I should have guessed brains weren't your forte. You can't blast a great hole in the middle of an ancient magical tree. We need to find that tunnel Zorok spoke of. My guess is it will be in the epicenter of the roots.
Right, and how are we supposed to find that?
Like this.
His fingertips stretched and darkened, becoming tree roots of their own, until eventually his entire arm was identical to the roots of the Sephiroth tree around them. He plunged his arm into a broken sewer wall, and after a minute or two, it began to give way. A wooden tunnel formed around Salad's arm, gradually widening until it became a wooden walkway large enough for the two of them to walk through. A moment passed before Salad grinned and withdrew his arm.
There you are.
Tyrannius, however, was no longer looking at Salad. His attention had been drawn to the water in the sewer, which had begun to ripple and undulate. He knelt by the water's edge and peered into the black water. Then he saw what he had feared. Eyes. Chrome blue and malevolent, swimming towards him through the darkness. Tyrannius barely had time to get out a
Salad, watch!
Before the water erupted in front of them, and a giant crocodile leapt for Tyrannius' throat. Whack! Tyrannius' claw instinctively leapt into action, slicing across the face of the crocodile with a razor shell.
Crocodile!
It reared back, readying a second attack, as another pair of blue eyes appeared, scuttling across the ceiling. The Toxicroak flew down towards Salad Fingers with a cross poison.
Toxicroak!
Whose pained screams echoed through the chambers of the sewer.
How did they know we were here?
They will not stop us!
Battle ensued between the mind-controlled Pokemon and the two Mystic Men. Crunch to Tyrannius' midriff, nearly taking him down before Salad swung a barked hammer arm down onto the crocodilian Pokemon. A guttural yelp from the Toxicroak as Tyrannius tore it off Salad's weakening body and slammed it into the wall. All sense of stealth and silence lost as the screams of pain reverberated through the pungent halls. Eventually, with one final razor leaf, Salad took down both Pokemon, and those chrome blue eyes dulled in defeat. Panting, Tyrannius and Salad looked at each other.
Those were League Pokemon, not wild. They go where they're sent. No one outside of Mystic knew about this mission, and no one saw us enter the sewers. Someone set us up.
It would seem so,
replied Salad, eyes on Tyrannius.
But it matters not. They couldn't stop us. Once again, the League severely underestimate the power of Team Mist.
A rumble echoed ominously through the sewer. At either end of the tunnel, Tyrannius could see blue light flickering on the walls, the cries of extreme bald Pokemon reaching his ears.
Ride on!
Dug Trio! Dug Dug Trio!
Phalanx, 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 Phalanx.
Ah, Buck! Ah, Buck! Houndoom!
They rounded the corner and encroached upon them, blocking the exits. Tyrannius saw a silhouetted human figure amongst them and heard a voice say, "Give up, Mystic. We have you surrounded." Strange, thought Tyrannius. How did he recognize that voice? He barely had time to think before Salad grabbed his arm.
I didn't get to S-Class Trainer through poker powers alone.
Pulling out a Pokeball, he would fight to the death for Team Mystic. And with Tyrannius on his side, he would probably win. So Tyrannius had a choice. Fight his way out alongside Salad Fingers and return to Frey, or escape into the wooden tunnel leading towards the Sephiroth tree. Though, was there another option? Trust that Kenny, Brandy, and Theo would return? Kenny's words echoed from all those months ago.
I promise you, I'm going to do everything I can to help you. I can't promise you it'll work, but I can promise you that I'll try.
Tyrannius stared at Salad Fingers and repeated the words he'd told Kenny Munnett all those months ago.
I'm done using this claw for bad things.
By the time the Pokemon had reached Tyrannius, Chunder, and Salad Fingers, Salad had fainted, and a bloody, bruised Tyrannius Chunder surrendered, raising a hand and a claw to the air.
Ooh. Well, well, well.
Who was the mystery voice?
Oh, I don't know. I guess is that open for interpretation at
someone
later times?
Someone that Tyrannius may have had to meet at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
No idea.
Some
legal. No idea. Oh, that's cool. Ah, that's brilliant.
Salad, honestly, terrifying character.
What a horrible, horrible creature.
Can't believe they're not our main villain.
Which brings us back round to Mr. Leavesley.
Hi,
who was kind enough to write us a second vignette.
What?
We didn't even double your paycheck, David.
Don't worry, as a writer, I'm used to not getting any paycheck at all, so...
David, similar question here. Is there anything to divvy up, or is it all prose?
There is a lieutenant of Elaine who is also a Mashana poker-powered. Somebody can take. There's also a Hatterini poker-power and a scientist.
Can I take Mashana?
You can take Mashana.
I'll take Hatterini.
I'll take the scientist. Oh, that's fine.
There we go.
So what is your vignette, David? What is this?
Well. So mine's Elaine.
This is Elaine, the meow stick poker-powered who shot Brandy on the train and joined Team Mystic, just so we're clear. Great.
Just okay, great. I can't believe anybody would not remember the incredibly important figure
of
Elaine.
So fleshed out Elaine. Yeah, no, totally.
A few months ago, Elaine had been a pencil pusher at a recruitment agency in a town that people only lived in to go elsewhere. She had lived a life of incredible consistency, which she now realised was a euphemism she had used for being so bored that even a conversation with the ticket inspector of the Nidorient Express had felt like something she would carry with her forever. She had heard, of course, that people who tried to hide their poker powers, people who had suppressed them so far that they had even convinced themselves they no longer had them, were very prone to trying to feel something, anything more potent than their sense of shame. Tattoos, exercise, risky sports, you name it. But for Elaine, she had found something even more profoundly painful than riding fast cyclizar around sharp corners. Mind-numbing drudgery. To live a life so intensely mundane that to even imagine she could be special or dangerous could be dulled with a further descent into being a background actor in the lives of others. And then she came back from her bland, tawdry little holiday to Piran Isle, and everything changed. For months now, she had lived a life that made her feel more and more like she was ascending the ranking system of Formian social importance, the way Pokemon trainers felt, she imagined, when the Pokemon League gifted them a new rank. Every day, she felt more like the fate of society at large hung in her paws, and she had Frey to thank. Could she have imagined just 4 months ago commanding an army of other psychic poker-powereds to mow down hordes of blue-eyed Pokemon 10 times her height? A Baxcalibur and a Giraldon both lifted like salt and pepper shakers off a table as her psychic blast ensconced them, rising them so high into the air that they passed out and fell to their deaths.
Oof.
Could she have imagined just 4 months ago blowing the doors off the Pokemon League's laboratories off their hinges as she attempted to achieve Frey's single goal for her? Clear a path to the Sephiroth tree at all costs. It was then, as she looked across the room to the shutters that connected to the ruins in the centre of the league, that she saw someone confidently stand before her goal. A single scientist, lanky-haired and long-limbed.
Is this me, David?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'd hope to confront Team Mystic myself,
they said, a smile darting across their otherwise inscrutable face.
I'd hoped this was how the experiment ended, and my hypothesis was right.
This sounds like the badass line, last line of defence that the Pokemon League has got.
It does sound long-limbed and lanky-haired, though.
It does seem long-limbed and lanky-haired. Right.
No one needs to die today, said Elaine. No one needs to die unless they choose to get in the way of Frey's great plan.
You are labouring under the misapprehension that I'll be the one fighting you.
All right, Ed Miliband.
What a great topical reference for our audience.
There's even the word labouring in there, so all I'm saying is I did amazingly with that.
And with that, 20 silver orbs descended from the ceiling in a ring around Elaine and her troops, and from each emerged something that made Elaine's stomach flip. Not a single Pokemon appeared from these balls, but instead 20 people, their eyes blue and their bodies twitching oddly.
Ooh,
I thought the X-Extreme balls were destroyed,
said one of Elaine's lieutenants.
I thought Frey made sure of that.
Clearly the League kept a few back, said Elaine.
Do we? How do we? They're like us, aren't they?
Said one of the other psychic poker-powereds, her eyes sparkling with nerves beneath her Hatterini hat.
All that matters is the Sephiroth tree, said Elaine, hoping she sounded more convincing than she felt. Everything that prevents that is the enemy.
Right.
Said her lieutenant, who readied a swirl of Mushana-esque dream powder.
Let's go.
Before anyone could say another word, the score of controlled poker powers began to scuttle, sprint, and swoop towards Frey's troops. Flames rippled at the mouth of the man on all fours, now heading for Elaine, and she attempted to lift him up telekinetically, but to no avail. But why?
Mushana!
She dodged the fire, but twisted her ankle as she threw herself across the room, and suddenly the man was on top of her, and she knew. A Houndoom. Could the type of a person's powers affect them like they, too, are Pokemon? She had never fought with another of her kind, had never considered what combat between them might mean. And now, as she saw flames lick at his lips once more, she began to feel the very real fear of a pain that could not be recovered from. A decision with no ending but death. And then, wham, a blast from one of her allies knocked the Houndoom off and she was free. As she staggered to her feet, she saw her enemy crumpled in a barely stirring heap nearby in a shadowy corner of the room. As she approached, she saw that he was still conscious but barely able to move. And she knew how he felt. It was how she had been when Frey had found her in the woods beneath an Adorient Express, when the world had turned against her. As she stood over her quarry, panting for breath, she wondered what Frey would say watching her murder one of her own kin. But then she knew what Frey had said so many times before. I am not the savior of all poker-powered people. I am the savior of those smart enough to wish to be saved. But this poor person wasn't even sentient, not even able to move from themselves. If only there was another way. But this is war. And in war there are no other ways. All that matters is the Sephiroth tree. Even if Elaine wasn't entirely sure why. I'm sorry, said Elaine as she pulled a knife from her belt and readied it. I'm so sorry. Her life could never be the same. She had left that option behind long ago. But to live even a few days in a world where you matter is worth any cost. Any cost at all.
Oh, dark.
Dark, man. Dang.
Whoa. Ironically, for a psychic type, really dark. Really, really dark. Yeah. Dang. So just to preamble, mine is the final war story vignette, and this is war story colon Tyler. So we have a Tyler, which I'm going to give to Ali.
Oh, okay, great.
David, can you take Frey?
Absolutely.
Tom, therefore, you get Elikid.
Great. Does Elikid speak in this one?
Well, he says Elikid. You can have Elikid plus unnamed Pokemon.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. Tyler clung tight to the railing. His knuckles ached. From this height, perched in the scaffold above the Pokemon League main stadium, the night air and bitter wind tore at his exposed skin, threatening to rip his signature purple scarf from his face. With the Pokemon League's walls now breached, the fighting had spread to the stadiums within the League itself, coliseums used to battle but unfamiliar with the wanton destruction that genuine conflict can inflict on its surroundings. Fires raged in banks of seating. Smoke and weather effects clouded the air. Steel girders groaned and gave way, crashing into glass VIP rooms, obliterating food trucks and stairways. The League had been evacuated of civilians long ago, but Tyler shuddered to imagine the cost to human life this scenario could threaten were it to expand beyond the confines of the League. Even amongst the gloom and debris, he could see skirmishes continuing to rage. Blue-eyed Extreme Ball Pokemon roared, summoning whatever strength they could muster in the unenviable task of fending off unfathomable awakened Pokepowers. A Pidgeot darted into the night sky to his right, only to be shot down unceremoniously by a wicked bolt of lightning from below. Tyler almost lost his footing as the earth trembled from somewhere beneath the stadium, an earthquake retaliating against the unseen electric assassin. Tyler glanced down at his tablet, the central command console of the Extreme Ball Pokemon. As each Pokemon was felled, the blue dot reflecting them on the screen became red. What had been a sea of powerful blue was quickly becoming a hellish river of red. Tyler's Elekig blew out a puff of vape smoke, his voice low and hard. A faint clanging shook Tyler from his momentary stupor, and echoing around the roof of the stadium. Someone or something was ascending towards him.
Be on guard, Elekig.
Tyler released the iron railing to which he had attached himself and moved slowly across the walkway. Each footstep made a metallic clang he could do nothing to mask. The wind whipped between girders and poles, howling as exposed every crevice in the stadium's rafters like a mighty hyena hunting for a hapless Natu.
Show yourself. I know you're there.
Tyler rasped in a vain attempt to display confidence. Tyler's footsteps stopped as he felt a chill race up his spine, a chill no scarf could ever protect him from.
Oh, we've been here the whole time.
The voice was soft, reassuring. From the shadows on the opposite walkway emerged a woman with white hair, a sarong and flip-flops. In her arms, a limp Elekid, her black finger pressed against its temple. She locked eyes with the bewildered Tyler and smiled.
Rough day.
Tyler whipped his head down to his left.
Elekid?
To his horror, the Elekid beside him was transforming before his eyes, yellow fur giving way to layers of thick black mane, elongated fangs, and malice-filled eyes.
Kid. Kirak.
Subdue him, Zoroark.
The Zoroark was on Tyler before you could say sucker punch, claws and powerful sinew pinning him to the metallic floor, his head dangling into the abyss of the stadium below. Tyler allowed his head to roll back. Now, upside down, the battle-scarred landscape beneath him seemed as if the sky itself was awash with fire, a heavenly brawl too vast for mere mortals to divine or effect. Frey was beside him now, crouched, her pale white knees exposed. Her skin looked ailing. Black veins and a violent pulse. Her face was gaunt, turquoise eyes retreating into deep sockets. Tyler fought a wave of repulsion. Zoroark allowed its fingers to tighten around Tyler, and Tyler could feel his grip on consciousness waning. Frey sighed and gently stroked Zoroark's arm, encouraging him to loosen his grip, before locking eyes with the white-haired woman.
What is it you were trying to achieve here?
Frey exhaled with pity.
I was the one to stop this. To stop you.
Tyler spat. Frey allowed her face to contort, puzzled.
You don't even know what I look to achieve. Why stop me?
Because I'm a hero. I am the Pokemon League. And the Pokemon League does whatever it mother-mucking takes to protect its region from people like you.
Whatever it takes.
Frey replied coolly, eyeing Tyler's Extreme Ball command console still fastened to his belt.
Incidentally, where's Seto Kappa, Tyler? He's gone dark since informing me the Sephiroth tree had warped here to the Pokemon League. Perhaps you know where he is. He inferred that you two were close in our communication.
Tyler remained silent.
You know, in some respects, I understand you, Tyler.
Frey rose from her crouching position, surveying for herself the devastation of the war raging beneath them.
There are certain causes that call for extreme measures.
She turned from him before adding with venom.
But you are no hero. You're a narcissist with a savior complex. My father, Gordo, was a hero, Tyler. And the Pokemon League destroyed him, leaving in his wake three people who took everything from me to be named the elite champions of Formia. Real heroes die, and history is written by those that broke them.
Frey's words hung in the silence, punctuated only by the distant screeching of a Poképod, presumably lowering everyone's defense by two stages.
Sensational.
What do you want?
Tyler uttered limply.
I want you to release Salad and Tyronius and allow a select few of Team Mystic into the Sephiroth tree. And I want you to stop anyone else from following us.
Or else what? You'll kill me?
Frey smirked.
That depends, Tyler, on how you want history to see you. So what do you want to be? A true hero dying pointlessly for his honor in the rafters of his own stadium as one of Formia's greatest losers. Or the hero you and I create right now. The Tyler who valiantly drove back the Team Mystic forces I'm about to retreat. The Tyler whose courage and guile stopped Team Mystic in its tracks.
Tyler could not meet Frey's eyes.
Do you really want to be a hero, Tyler?
She said, allowing Zororik's grip to tighten once again.
Or do you want to be seen as a hero?
Tears began rolling down Tyler's face, collecting in wet patches on the lining of his scarf. He gave the faintest of nods.
I just want the region to be safe.
He choked.
So do I, Tyler. I wonder if you told yourself that mantra when you were aligning with Team Helsing and rounding up Pokepowers.
Frey motioned for Zororik to release Tyler whilst placing the unconscious Elekid at the young man's feet. Tyler stood, his knees weak, his balance wavering.
What do I have to do?
Clear us a path to the tree. We'll maintain some light fighting to give the illusion of struggle between us, but I'll retreat the majority of forces beyond the walls. You lock this stadium down. No one follows us.
Frey paused before turning to leave Tyler, still swaying slightly. She leaned in close and whispered one final instruction into Tyler's ear. His eyes narrowed in confusion.
In the meantime, enjoy your victory. You and your old friend Kappa can toast to it.
Frey and Zororik began to disappear again into the shadow, soft padded paws and flip-flops oddly silent on the metallic walkway.
It might not be me,
Tyler shouted to his own surprise.
But someone will stop you.
Frey allowed herself the slightest glance over her shoulder.
No, Tyler, as you've just proven. Formia doesn't have heroes.
Brandy, Theo, and Kenny ascend the lip of a hill to see that the source of those impossibly large plumes of smoke you've been seeing on your ascent is the Pokemon League itself, ablaze and overcome with war. What are you going to do?
There we go, war stories. Hope you enjoyed. Next time, it will be a more usual episode of Critical Ditto, in which it will feature Kenny, Brandy, and Theo doing stuff. But we just thought this might be a nice change, a nice way to set the scene, and I hope you agree. I'm going to do some thank yous. So first of all, I would like to thank Michael Sands for creating the game Monster of the Week, on which our game Pocket Monster of the Week is based upon. I'd like to thank Braxton Burks and the Materia Collective, along with Glitch X City, for all of the music you hear, and extra music coming from Epidemic Sounds, which is lovely. Thank you to all of them. I'd also like to thank Junichi Masuda and Satoshi Tajiri for creating Pokemon, but remember, we are not associated with Game Freak, the Pokemon company, or Nintendo, in fact. So nothing to do with them. We are completely not for profit. I would, of course, like to thank our wonderful patrons, of which we have a few new ones. It feels like there's been a little influx of people, which is really, really lovely still after all this time. People are still sort of finding the podcast and wanting to jump on board and support in this way. But of course, you can always support either on the Patreon by becoming one of the, joining one of the Patreon tiers, or you can support by sharing the podcast with your friends, either online or offline, using your mouth or sign language or just eye contact. Just eye contact them to listen to the podcast. But I digress. I'm going to thank the patrons because of that's part of it. That's just part of the deal. So I would like to thank Joseph Tibbs, Freya, Lily Gilder, Rosie Skies Ahead, Christy, Mega Noodle, Zachary Turing, Eleanor Mialov, Tommy Portillo, Aidan Clark, Mark Smith, Brad Demon Dowker, My Cabbages, Dr. Rani, Jerembi's Mum, DeGeezy, Alex W., Crispy, Huxley Spicer, Beth Shivers, Heather L. Snell, Betsy Lewin Lee, Darius Jakowski, Polka-55, Ellie Lieberman, Jerembi, Carrie Morrison, Scott M, Dr. Mega Man PhD, Kai Copin Cosplay, Big Fat Nuke, Jonah Jackson, Josh Anderson, Cesar Trevino, Force Majeure, Crandon Creations, Eric Eichinger, Millamoir, Ginny Voss, and Alistair Collinson, a.k.a. The Game Master. Thank you so much, everyone. You know, it means so much to us that you've signed up to help us in the ways that you can. Finally, I would like to thank Ali, Stu, and David for playing the game, writing all of those vignettes, which were brilliant. David even did two, so double thank you to David. And I would also like to give a special thank you to our wonderful editor, Carrie Morrison, who I think you will agree has done a fantastic job in this episode. They are an extremely talented person. You should hire them for your podcast or to produce your podcast if you are interested at all. Do get in touch on the Discord or Carrie's Twitter, of course, which is Carrie Jomo, at Carrie Jomo on Twitter. And yeah, remember, go catch them all. And by all, I mean your dreams. Only to be disintegrated by one of the many, many poker powers out there. Didn't finish that line.
Finish that sentence. just disappeared into the whiteness reader. Of the page, didn't it, Tom?
for the reader, that sentence actually read, magic to attack whoever or whatever, only to be disintegrated by one of the many... I'm old.
I also love that Boromir Draw has become Toast of London.
It's better that way.
I think so. Okay.